In a few weeks, teachers across the nation will embark on a new school year, full of uncertainty and unlike anyone they've ever experienced. A recent USA Today Ipsos poll shows that about 20% of teachers surveyed said they have not decided to return. They have decided not to return to the classroom if they're required to teach in person. Other educators are making contingency plans to protect themselves and having tough conversations about their own mortality in the face of in-person teaching. One of those teachers is Denise Bradford, who's been teaching kindergarten for 30 years, and she joins us now. Welcome, Denise.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you've begun writing a living will as you think forward to what the school year might bring. This is a really heavy task in the face of all of the uncertainty right now. Tell us more.
So firstly, I just want to say that there's no one more eager to get back to school than teachers like me. We miss our students. We miss the aha moments. However, there is just simply so much on the minds of teachers like me. One of the things on the list of tasks to do going back to school is to figure out a plan of what we will do and how we will help students and other colleagues should a student or a teacher die. I don't think I'm alone in trying to be prepared. No one wants to leave their family with a big mess.
Sure. You teach in Orange County, California. And to remind our listeners, the Board of Education there voted to return children to schools without face masks or social distancing, despite a surge in coronavirus cases. I mean, we should say that of the districts within the county, many have decided against the recommendations and will hold classes virtually. But even the prospect of going back puts you specifically in a vulnerable position. You mentioned your family.
Definitely, it puts us in a vulnerable position. Unfortunately, we weren't very surprised by the Orange County Board's recommendation. And as far as my family, my mom is 79. And if I go to school, that really puts my entire family at risk when I come back home. I have a daughter with asthma. Does that mean I don't get to see my daughter for the school year?
Right, because then you'd have to make contingency plans for coming home every day to lessen your family's risk of exposure if you've been exposed. You know,
exactly.
This is typically the time when teachers are in full preparation mode. We're talking just a few weeks until school is supposed to start. How is this summer been for you?
It would certainly be more fun to be focusing on writing lesson plans than planning for what if we die. But I will say that our district, and I know many other districts, have been actually having professional development for teachers all summer. Teachers have been preparing because we knew there was a good chance this might happen, that we would go back to distance learning. And so everybody's been pretty much working to be prepared so that we have a much better plan. I think it's going to be a very different experience in the fall. But I can tell you it has not been a relaxing summer for any teacher that I know.
Absolutely. For any of us, but absolutely for teachers who are always planning forward. 30 years, you obviously love what you do. What additional considerations do you want school districts to take on as they develop plans for the upcoming school year?
I think at the local level, most school districts, including mine, are following the health department guidelines for state and locals. I think that one of the bigger issues is that school districts don't have the resources to really maintain even the most basic preventative measures. It's unfortunate that this has become a very political issue, but safe school reopening and equity for our communities requires funding. Unless the federal government steps in to help the states with school funding, it's going to be really hard to go back safely.
That's Denise Bradford. She's a longtime elementary school teacher from the Saddleback Valley Unified School District in Orange County, California. Denise, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Tanya.
Well, earlier this week, the American Federation of Teachers, the second largest teachers union, authorized its local and state chapters to strike if districts don't make sufficient precautions to keep teachers and students safe. President Randy Weingarten joins us now on Skype with the latest on those recommendations. Welcome back to Here and Now.
It's always wonderful to be with NPR. Thank you.
So, Randy, you've said striking is definitely a last resort, but it is a powerful tool. And one of the main pushes from the union is for districts to wait until COVID-19 transmission rates in a community fall below 1% and average daily positive rates stay below 5%. There are very few places that have achieved these numbers. What else are you advising?
Well, when we look at the 5% number, it means that community spread is below 5%. That was the number that Governor Cuomo, Governor Newsom Governor Cuomo in New York and Governor Newsom in California to make decisions about school opening and school closing. And so that's why this threshold becomes very important as an absolute line in the sand. And then after that, making sure that there is testing and tracing and the guardrails that you have to have in schools to prevent transmission. And the fact that there's a debate over this, and that President Trump, who, you know, threw money at the cruise ship industry, his son-in-law took money from the PPP program, why there would be debate over these kind of baseline standards that are necessary to contemplate schooling, as important as schooling is.
So I want to ask you more about this. So, I mean, this is not a cheap endeavor. You're asking for the federal government to help pay for these support systems, and we're talking billions of dollars. I mean, Congress is having a hard time coming up with a relief bill that they can all agree upon. Schools in some parts of the country will open in just a few weeks. We're talking 2 weeks. What's realistic at this point?
Well, that is a really good question. If you knew the money was coming for personal protective equipment, then of course districts could buy these things. But if you don't know it's coming, how do you open schools and say to people, oh, yes, we know Dr. Fauci and everybody else is saying that masks are really important, but sorry, we don't have them. I mean, it's just ludicrous. Just to fully reopen in places where there's no virus surge, you need $500 billion to $600 billion. So they can't talk out of both sides of their mouth and say, we need to do this, but then not give us the resources to get it done.
I want to ask you about something else. So we know that Black and Latino people in this country are suffering disproportionately from the pandemic. And this is an intersectional problem because many live in poorer communities that rely heavily on schools for services. What are you advising those districts to do as they weigh not only how to open, but how to serve their communities?
Three things. Number one, World Central Kitchen, Jose Andreas, and the AFT teamed up, and now many of the not-for-profit food groups and the NAACP, and we are envision opening school kitchens to actually serve communities. And so we've all teamed up to try to do that and to get the resources from Congress for that. Number two, we need to make sure that connectivity is real. And we should get digital equipment to every kid who needs it. Number three, we are trying to make sure that even if we are in remote, our instruction is more contoured to remote. We have this platform called Share My Lesson that we've made free to parents, to kids, to educators, whether they're in our union or not. And we put tips on what to do about remote instruction every single day on it.
You know, I mean, the fallout from this pandemic, no one can mitigate. I mean, we're all just trying to do the best we can. Are you concerned about the educational disparity gap widening? I mean, is there a way to mitigate it? You've laid out these three plans, and they sound like really solid plans. But the truth is that many wealthier communities will have the resources to educate their children during this time. And many of those communities that we're just talking about are really at a disadvantage, and lay out for us some of the systemic problems that we've been dealing with for decades in this moment.
I'm really concerned, and it's part of why, frankly, We need a new president. And frankly, it is now up to the teachers to actually rectify all of the mistakes that the Trump administration has done in fighting this virus, which is part of the reason why we started in April trying to figure out how to reopen schools and knew that these three things, where community spread is, having the safety guardrails, including that which you need to do in school, as well as testing, and being able to have the resources to pay for it. And that's why we have said very reluctantly that if we can't get these things any other way, we will authorize safety strikes as a last resort.
Randy Weingarten is the president of the American Federation of Teachers, the second largest teachers union in the country. Thank you.
Thanks so much.